Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast Market Rundown with Sean Hackett. Sean, how you doing this morning?
I'm pretty good, Mr. Casey. Doing really good. Feeling better after a little few days of sickness.
I tell you what, that cold stuff's been going all over the place. Everyone I know seems like they've got a cold or coming off of a cold or whatever. But when you go from extreme weather from one way to the other, hot to cold, hot to cold, hot to cold, sooner or later your body is like, I don't know what to do, so let's just get sick, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, man, there was some pretty – we talk about volatility a lot, but God dang, yesterday there was volatility to the max. We had about an 18-cent swing in corn, I think, something like that, 17.5-cent swing. Opened up 6.5 down, and it took off, and it closed up a little over 12, right around 12, I guess, yesterday. So soybeans did the same thing. They were down pretty well, and they came kind of bounced back and at least gained back what they lost for the day. But we're seeing that volatility pretty regular here now to where it's not so much day-to-day volatility, but interim day volatility. So talk about that a little bit and what you see happening in the markets.
Well, I think we finally have pried the markets loose. You know, we had this bearish trade for years where the algorithms just stayed short, stayed short, stayed short. We had big stocks. We didn't really – the U.S. had good weather, and we just kept – down that road, but we finally have pried loose the markets to where now the algorithms are no longer comfortable just being short, and they're getting caught being too short at the wrong times, and so we're starting to get the markets to move. And obviously we've had probably the worst planting season we've ever had, or certainly one of the top two, and the market is unsure what to make of it all. You have people running around saying we're going to lose 15 million acres. Some saying it's only going to be 5. People saying we could have trend line yields. Others saying we could be down 20 bushels to the acre. When you have those wide variety of estimates from people, the market simply, you know, is going to be changing its mind constantly like it did yesterday and not knowing what to do about it. And so this volatility is here to stay. We think ultimately later in the year this will lead to an upside breakout from this consolidation we've been going through. In the meantime, it's been a long way to go, lots of weather to trade, and the market is probably going to be unwilling to move higher until it gets some more clarity on exactly what is the situation. But the USDA gave us their best first look at it, and we now go from there.
Yeah. Okay. So the weather, again, we've been talking about weather for, since January, since I had you on here the first time.
Yeah,
and we've been having that discussion here quite a bit here of late, and we've talked about a million different angles that we're talking about here. But we are seeing not just the rain. No rain. I watched the forecast this morning on Ag Day, and you're getting some rain back in areas that don't need it. Right, where we've surpassed one soybean date here, June 5th. We got 15th coming up here in 3 days. That's going to be there. And a lot of these places that still didn't plant any corn haven't planted any soybeans yet either. You know, there's a few guys that have. Obviously, we've had a week of fairly dry weather, so a lot of guys got into the field, but there's still quite a few places that haven't even done anything yet. And then on the adverse side of that, the Southeast is as dry as it's ever been here of late, and they've gotten some rains and those kind of things too. But so the weather is playing a huge part in everything we see happening here. So talk a little bit about, soybeans, obviously with the China stuff and African swine fever, I mean, obviously we're going to have carry out irregardless of the fact just because of there's not enough pigs in the world to take up the supply that we would normally have. Where do you see soybeans going? I mean, do you see soybeans having some bullish trends right now? I mean, with some of the planting delays and those kind of things we see happening, that some of this carryout could get chewed up by the end of the year?
I don't think the planting is going to get the soybeans going. What I think is going to happen is we need to get the weather problem in August into September for soybeans to get them going. We need to see that South America is going to plant 10 more million acres of corn and 10 million less acres of soybeans. You know, because right now we've jacked up corn about as much as you can against soybeans, which is saying to South America, plant as much corn as you possibly can and don't plant soybeans. So I think that the bullish story for soybeans isn't today, but it's the next growing cycle,
gotcha,
which starts in South America, because if we keep taking all these acres on, I don't care how many pigs there are, you know, you can't chop out these kinds of acres of soybeans and say we're not going to have dramatic reductions in soybean stocks the following season, assuming weather's good. If we have bad weather, it could be catastrophic declines in ending stocks. So so I think corn is happening now. Soybeans is the next growing cycle. And so we're playing the spread game of goosing corn against soybeans. What I can easily see, if we get the crop planted in South America, all of a sudden they're going to start switching gears and going, oh my gosh, how much corn are we going to produce next year? Whoa. You know, we have this massive supply and they're going to switch gears. So right now I think soybeans are going to continue to struggle until we get some clear evidence that August weather is going to turn out hot, dry, which is really what we would need to get that market going in the near term. Right now it looks like that could actually happen. All our work says cool and wet through July, but it looks like we could be getting into a flip of that weather pattern where it was wet, it's dry, where it was dry, it's wet, and we talk about how that happens with the grand solar cycle minimum. We think we could be getting a shift to where we get a hot, dry pattern in August, which would be really, really bad for soybeans. But it's just too early quite yet to trade that. We need to get into the middle part of July before we get more clarity on that. So I guess what I'm getting at is soybeans not likely to go down when the corn's strong, but I don't see soybeans outperforming over the next 30 days.
Right. Okay. All right, so there's one crop out there that has been kind of silently creeping up on everybody and with little bit to no real coverage, and you talk about wheat. You know, the wheat market, you know, we got some very distressed crops over in Russia right now. Obviously, Australia has been wicked dry for as long as I've been alive, I think. And, you know, you look at what's happening in, you know, eastern Ukraine. We're just getting there. Some issues over there. Western Ukraine seems to be okay, but eastern side seems to be a little bit dry. We're getting water in the key parts of the wheat belt here in the U.S. that when they don't really need it. Now, in my particular area, wheat looks great. I mean, we got looks good. We're probably 2 weeks behind schedule just because of some of the stuff that happened earlier, some frost and stuff like that. But for the most part, it looks pretty good across the board. But wheat's kind of making that run. It's kind of bouncing around. And how long do you think till wheat really breaks out and makes that move higher than it's been going?
We think it's going to happen within the next 2 weeks. The way we see it, Oklahoma and Kansas, which is really the key to Kansas City wheat, for example.
Right.
Very, very, very heavy rains are expected for the next 2 to 3 weeks as you're moving into key harvest time. That means two things. It means yields are going to come down, quality is going to come down. So I think we're going to have an abundant amount of low-quality wheat because of these downgrades, and we're going to have a much shorter supply of higher-quality wheat. And, of course, Kansas City wheat, raised in the futures market, is a certain grade that's higher quality. So and to some extent, Minneapolis wheat would be helped by that. So then we look at over what's going on in Russia, the Ukraine, like you said, hot, dry, next 30 days looks really, really unfavorable. But remember, last year's crop was way, way down. I think we're 89 down to 72 million metric tons. They were expecting to bump up to 79, 80. But with this dry weather, we could easily be moving back to the mid-70s, which means we wouldn't really get much of a bump up from last year's really bad crop. They had excess stocks last year to sell, to keep them, but they kind of run those down, and now they don't have that excess to sell this cycle, which means their exports could come down. And so we're really, really positive on the winter wheat market. We really think it's a market that could dramatically – I mean, we could go up a dollar, and corn doesn't have to go up much. You know, we're so compressed right now. If you look at KC wheat relative to the corn price, we're at the tightest ratio that you're going to have over the last 45 years, which means, you know, If corn goes higher, wheat goes higher. If wheat goes higher, corn doesn't have to go higher. So either way, in the winter wheat market, you win. So if we were to play or look at a market that could outperform and should do well, we like very much the winter wheat market, especially KC wheat. So we think that's a market to focus on for a change of leadership away from the corn market leading to the winter wheat market, which has clear and present danger with weather, which corn right now we're transitioning, but we don't have a new weather problem to trade just yet.
Right. So. Okay. All right. So here's something I've been watching here of late because I've got forage harvesters that I need to get sell some used ones. So I've been tracking the class three milk market and kind of watching what's going on there. And, I kind of quit watching it for a while because it made me depressed. I don't even sell milk. So I can't imagine what it's like for the guys that are selling it. But over the last couple of weeks, I've seen about a couple dollar jump in the price of class three milk. So I think yesterday I watched it and it closed a little bit over $17, $17.63 or $17.50 or something like that.
Yep.
That's a big turn from what it was. It's been down quite significantly lower than that. So what's going on in the milk market, and are the herds getting cold enough now to where they're kind of starting to catch up with some of the supply that they have?
Well, I mean, we had those terrible prices. Herd liquidation took place. The dairy cow herd shrank, and our milk production went negative in the U.S. I mean, anyone that knows anything about U.S. production, it going negative is extremely unusual. It almost never does, and we went negative. And we were flat the month before and flat the month after. So that flat and negative production for 3 months running is highly unusual. So that's tightening the market up. However, our cow is still very, very good. And herd liquidation has stopped at these higher prices. And so what we're going to start to see is that the herd stabilizing and the differential from last year to this year is going to be narrowing. So we think that milk production is going to start to grow again. And that's going to probably take the easy punch bowl away from the dairy market in the U.S. and allow supply to normalize a little bit. The other thing is this Mexico trade deal that was just signed. We don't really know the details. Trump says they're going to buy a lot of agriculture. We don't know what it actually means, but there's a thought process that maybe the Mexicans are going to be buying a lot of cheese, which they always have bought a lot of.
Right.
And they might buy a lot of non-fat dairy powder milk from the U.S. And that's kind of buttressed the market up the last 3 or 4 days is that there's an expectation that maybe they're going to be a big buyer of U.S. milk in the short run to appease Trump and keep him from changing his mind and putting tariffs on again. So those two things combined have really allowed this milk market to go back into the 17s. And that's a price that works for the dairy farm. You can make money there. And so, it's hard to know how much more upside there is based upon Mexico, but based upon production, we think we're kind of nearing at least an interim top that might hold for a while. So we're thinking the rally is probably close to running its course for now, and we'll probably set up for some kind of a summer correction. That would be our best guess at this point, once the Mexican momentum wanes away.
Okay. Yeah, that's not what I wanted to hear you say, Sean. I wanted to hear you say it was here forever, never going back to the way it was. At least until I got my chopper sold, and then we could do something different, right?
We're bullish later. We are bullish later. We don't think this is the top. We think it's a top, but not the top.
Right on. Do you think, just because of the way the corn market's going to be, that there's going to be a lot more competition for corn silage than there might be for actual feed silage? I mean, do you think there might be a little competition there, that where maybe feedlots are going to maybe open up a little bit and say, hey, you know what, we'll pay you a little bit more than we have in the past on some contracts just to make sure we secure our feed for our feedlots?
Absolutely. I mean, I think looking at this weather situation, not knowing how it's going to turn out, but knowing it could be catastrophically bad, you have to do whatever you have to do to ensure that you stay in business in case it turns out to be the worst case scenario.
Right.
We don't know if it will or won't, but this is not a year to mess around. It's not a year to mess around. And, you can buy calls all you want, but the feedlot can't feed the cows with calls. You have to feed the feedlot with actual physical feed.
Yeah.
So if you want to stay in business, you got to deny. So I absolutely believe that's going to be happening without a doubt,
yeah.
For sure. The other thing is, given how cheap wheat is relative to corn right now, as long as that stays the case, I mean, there's going to be a lot of low-quality feed wheat being replaced without a doubt right now. I mean, that's no doubt that's going to happen. So a lot of dynamics going on, and all of it's, you know, is more constructive, the grain markets, than it's been in quite some time, because, you know, it's the corn market being what it is, there's a lot of tentacles that reverberate through other markets, and it's all, everyone's shifting gears and trying to figure out how to make this work. And so it's an interesting summer, and if the worst case scenario does play out, you know, it's going to be, you know, we haven't seen the end of the upside volatility. We would see a much bigger surge later in the year like we did in 1993. So,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the other thing that follows wheat closely, since we're on that topic, you know, rice has a direct correlation to wheat, and, you know, we've had a lot of issues in the U.S. getting the rice crop planted, and because of being too wet, and adversely on the other side of the world where there's large amounts of rice being planted, we're running into some dry spells over there. So talk about that correlation between rice and wheat, and which one is going to have a bigger impact on price.
Well, right now it looks like the wheat market's going to go up first.
Okay.
With the wet weather in the U.S. continuing, with the dry weather in Russia. I mean, these are not 2 months down the road. These are clear, present danger right now. Mm-hmm. Next 30 days, it's happening. So it looks to us like the wheat market's going to lead, and we know that once wheat markets take off, it's just inevitable that the rice market follows. Because of the replacement, you know, wheat gets too high, everybody goes, buys more rice, and, you know, there's an interchangeable demand effect there. The other thing, though, you know, 2 months, 3 months from now, is that the El Nino is here, and we're getting a very, very aggressive response in the atmosphere. That's why it's been so wet in the U.S. It's an exaggerated response, which we talked about in grand solar cycles. El Nino, La Nina can amplify.
Mm-hmm.
So it means wet U.S., dry Asia, India, China, Southeast Asia, Indonesia. So we would expect an extremely dry response in Asia. And we think that as we move into that part of the cycle from July onward, we're going to start taking Asian rice production down for the first time in like 5 years, I think. And so, so that's the next big thing for rice to us, is to have Asia getting a big weather problem, this big weather trouble like it did back in 2015 when production came down, and to get the rice price in Asia to come off the bottom. We think that really, you know, would be the next big thing for rice. And if that happens while the wheat market is taking off, you know, there could be a really, really big surge of rice. We already know the U.S. has had lower acres. You know, yields are going to be down. We know South America had a terrible rice crop. So Western Hemisphere rice is tight as a drum. But Asia keeps suffering from this oversupply, you know, kind of like corn.
Yeah.
And it was 30 days ago. But we think that's going to be remedied. But it's still, we think it's going to take till July for the market to react to that. But it's coming. Mm-hmm. It's coming.
Right on. Okay, so cotton. Cotton's one thing we've talked about here a few times, and a lot of it based around the fact that there's going to be, you know, we keep talking about, or not going to be, but there's this this notion of how we keep just barely missing these recessions. Every week it feels like there was a new chance for a recession to creep in, or something out there that kind of showed that a lot of it's trade-related. Not just in the U.S., but around the world, is kind of slowing everything down just because of the way tariffs and everything work and what have you. So cotton is a direct correlator to what's happening out there in the marketplace as far as the economy goes, because it, you know, everything it makes, clothes and so on and so forth. Cotton market's been on a pretty good run for the last five years, something like that, 2 to 5 years, and now we're kind of seeing it. There's some volatility there that's showing signs that it could be headed lower. So what's your take on the cotton market, and where do you think it's going?
Yeah, I mean, intermediate term, it's really hard to get excited about, because industrial commodities, like you said, are going to have this headwind of demand being under pressure, and cotton is clearly one of those. Short term, however, you know, we have some interesting weather that's been going on in the Southeast, like you said, with some very dry weather. And also, you know, the key area of India. India is a dominant producer and exporter of cotton. You know, we're looking at some very, very problematic weather in India. So we think weather could potentially cause a short-term bump in the market over the summer on weather concerns. But we think once that happens, you know, the overall weakness in the global economy will win out and we could see lower prices in the fall. So we're kind of short-term constructive, thinking we get a weather bounce. But intermediate term, we still think prices are heading lower. We don't see the ability for the cotton market to overcome those kinds of economic headwinds, given its sensitivity as an industrial commodity. So short term, like I said, we do think we could, you know, I think we're at 65 cents now on December contract. You know, maybe we could bump up to 70, 75 on some weather. But we think ultimately that's going to be a selling opportunity. So.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's jump over to protein complex. You look at, you see happening with cattle markets, kind of been here and there all over the place, really based around what happens with the stock market and the ups and downs that we're seeing there. Obviously, the stock market goes up. There's a correlator to that when you look at beef along those lines. So a lot of volatility. Again, there's not a market that we have right now where there's not some volatility playing in the facts. What do you see happening in the cattle complex, and how do you feel that that's going to play out here heading into these hopefully warm summer months?
Well, we know the meat protein shortage is there. It's not going away. The problem is because of the trade tariff war, everyone else is getting the demand, and we're not.
Mm-hmm.
For now. Now, that can't go on forever, but it can go on for
long enough.
And you know, it's not like our production is down in the U.S. for hogs and cattle. I mean, we're producing quite a bit of it. So it's a timing issue. You know, how much longer can the world avoid buying U.S. Meat protein? The answer is probably not much longer. So we're kind of feeling, especially the cattle market, got completely washed out late last week. And we think the limit up move we had on Monday was maybe a wake up call that the market is starting to show wanting to go upside potential now versus, you know, they're just down like we've been seeing for all this time. So pretty constructive on that. Hogs is a little more problematic because, you know, without Chinese buying pork or without that happening on a regular basis, it's a tough call to say that hogs in the 70 cent range or 80 cent range is enough to the downside. We think there could be more downside there. Our smart money algorithm that we follow has triggered a buy signal in cattle, we've not gotten a lot of excitement on the hog market. So that tells us that there might be more downside to come or consolidation for hogs, but we think the cattle market's ready for some upside volatility, especially if it looks like, you know, that we're probably going to get some grilling going and some seasonal demand going, which kind of get pushed off because of the ridiculous spring that we had. So right now we would be still bearish hogs, but thinking cattle could move higher here. So
yeah that Memorial Day weekend that it was like 50 degrees or whatever it was, rain didn't really make me want to go out and fire up the grill. So I hope that changes, man. I'm really looking forward to some warm weather. I mean, we need some heat units out here where I'm at. Everybody needs heat units to get the corn that's been planted up and looking healthy. So hopefully we can keep that up and get that what we need. So
just remember, because we're so far behind and it looks like it's going to stay cooler than normal in July, mm-hmm. It's going to be a long growing season. I mean, we're going to be pollinating corn in September.
Yeah.
We're going to have a long road here to figure out what's going to happen from normal. So, you know, the bottom line is that we're going to be trading a lot of volatility for a long time until we can get some answers. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get any answers until September, really. So that means that we're going to be on pins and needles. You know, whether, oh, things are looking better, they're going to crush the market. Oh, not so good, they're going to, you know, like we saw yesterday,
right.
Flop. It's going to be a lot of that. But ultimately, we think it's going to lead to an upside breakout. But it's going to be a lot of frenetic trading in the short run. And that means, someone has to buy corn or buy soybeans or buy wheat, use those downside volatilities to, you know, get coverage. And for those that are on the producer side, you know, use the upside volatility to sell, you know, grain that you have to, that's the only thing you can do right now. Figuring out, you know, when it's going to move up or down, it's going to be very difficult. But just know that when you get a surge, just sell the surge for now until we get clarity. So,
yeah. Well, good stuff as usual, Sean. There's always your wealth of information, a lot of stuff going on out there. Folks want to reach out to you and get some more information about what you do or how you do it, what's the best way for them to do that?
Our website at Hackett, Hackett, advisors.com. Lots of information there, videos, webinars, podcasts, to see what we do. make sense to them.
Right on. And anyone that's out there, if you would like to set up a Moving Iron podcast koozie, hit me up on Twitter. I'll send you what set that I got out there. So
I got yours, by the way.
All right, man. Look at that. The mail system does work. They actually go from Florida all or Nebraska all the way to Florida. Look at that.
The stamp on it was Camel Express. So I'm not sure how that got there.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes a while sometimes, but you know what? We're out here in God's country, so.
Yes, you are.
Sean, take care of yourself. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Casey. Thanks. Bye.
Moving iron in the 21st century.